People who kiss family members on the lips. Now, Rebecca, I know that you do this like with your baby.
Okay, yeah. Please clarify that I do this with my like one-year-old, not one-year-old, like my father. Right. I don't like kiss my dad on the lips.
I said with your baby.
Okay, thank you.
Not, yeah, but like grown people when they greet their family. I mean, you know, it's like an up north kind of thing to like kiss on the cheek or like an Italian thing or whatever. But no, I'm talking kiss on the lips. I've seen people do it before. It's weird. Being a mom is hard. Being a business owner and a mom is even harder. So we love to talk shop together, whether that's what we're planning to have for dinner in our homes or what we're planning for next quarter in our content calendars.
But most of all, we love to hear the stories of other moms who have built their businesses and brands. We've dreamed of becoming business besties with some of our favorite business owners online, and we are going to use this podcast to do exactly that.
Come for the stories behind how moms built their businesses, aka the business banter. Then stay for the laughter and candid conversations, aka the bestie banter.
This is the Bestie Business Banter Podcast.
All right, Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We're so excited. We haven't had an artist on the podcast yet.
Well, I'm honored.
Your first podcast, our first artist. We're very excited. We really wanted to start as we were doing this podcast with like a variety of different entrepreneurs. So Lauren and I were talking the other day. We're like, we should get an artist on the podcast. And I was like, we should get Amy on the podcast. So I'm thrilled you're here. But before I tell people why we wanted you, why I specifically really love you and what you do, why don't you just give people like your 15-second elevator pitch, which like, I know you're an artist. So I don't know if you really have one, but like, what do you say to people when they ask what you do?
Right. You definitely say
what
something.
Does that say about me? No elevator pitch. No. So it is. I guess it is weird. So I tell people I'm an artist. I say I'm a local artist and they always ask what kind. And it is hard for me to explain. Mm-hmm. So I say that I'm a sculptural artist. So I make water sculptures out of resin, but you frame them and hang them on the wall. So my 15-second pitch is, yeah, I'm a local artist. I'm a mom of three. And yeah, I never thought I would be here like doing this, but this is what I'm doing. It's crazy.
It's funny to me that someone would ask like, what kind of artist? Like if I'm just like a normal person, I'm really not going to have that much depth to my art knowledge. But I guess, I mean, you say that, then I look at your Instagram and I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
I guess like they want to know what you paint, like what kind of picture do you create or whatever? And it's like, well, I don't do any of that now actually. So it's a totally different genre.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to hear your kind of like evolution story into doing what you do now, but we have a lot to do before then. So before we do that, I just want to tell people who don't know you. First of all, you've got to follow her on Instagram. She's Amy Marcy Art, which we'll link in the show notes. But I've never seen anyone do what you do. And I think that's what makes you so unique. I mean, obviously all artists are talented in their own way and do their own thing, but there are a lot of people at least that the Instagram algorithm feeds me that seem to be doing a lot of similar things, but I've never seen anyone do what you do. And I love watching you do what you do. I think your reels and stuff are fascinating. Like you're just an enjoyable person to watch as you're marketing it. And then I also love how you share, you know, yourself with your audience, you know, on your Instagram. And you have a really big following for not being in this business crazy long.
Like, oh, well, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm surprised myself. So,
I love
what happened. I don't even know. Yeah.
I love watching your process. If you're like, you've got these like giant pieces of art, you got to figure out how to like freight them across the country. I'm like, wow, her day to day life is really different from mine.
Yeah, she didn't think she'd be doing logistics. I'm sure, like UPS logistics. Okay, well, I am a new follow to you. I mean, I looked at your page before when Rebecca was like, this is my friend Amy. And I was like, oh my gosh, her art is so cool. Like you might have just said this. I've never seen anything like it before. I was like, I want that hanging on my wall. And then even just like getting to see you in stories today, I was like, I can't wait to talk to her and just learn more because I mean, I have a few friends who are artists, but literally nothing like what you do. And so I'm excited to hear more about the process. And I think what you do lends itself to, obviously art is visual, but the behind the scenes, watching the process is really cool to just see it all come together. And that's I mean, we've all painted with like watercolors or acrylics like at home for fun, but I've never done what you do for fun. So it seems like a real gift and a real skill that I'm excited to hear more about.
Well, that is super cool to hear. And it's definitely encouraging for me to like continue to show or share, I guess, some of the process and the behind the scenes of what I do, because I do think Instagram is one of those things that's just very overwhelming and you don't know if you're sharing too much or too little or quite how to bring people in. So that's good. That's good for me to hear.
I think you're doing a great job. Okay. Well, I'm excited for Lauren to get to know you better. We've gotten to spend some time together a little bit because our husbands work together in a capacity. And so that's how I've met you. And every time I'm going to one of his work events, I'm always like, now, since the last year I met you, I'm like, is Amy going to be there? So I feel like we're on our way to being best friends. And Lauren's going to be your best friend.
Well, too. I do the same thing. I do the same exact thing. I'm like, is Rebecca going to be there? Or I'll message you. Are you going to be there?
Yeah. That's our condition now to know before we go to these things. But we want our listeners to always feel like they're like sitting, having a cup of coffee or an adult beverage with us while they listen. So we're going to get into some bestie banter. And we like to start with a little blood boiler because it just kind of helps to get things off your chest. So I don't know who wants to start us off. I feel like I'm always like coming in hot. So
I'll start you with a blood boiler, but I don't know if it's more of an unpopular opinion. I feel like these are kind of interchangeable. And again, I have to apologize if this is you, either of you. People who kiss family members on the lips. Now, Rebecca, I know that you do this like with your baby.
Okay, yeah.
And like please, sometimes please they're clarify so that kissable. I do this
with my like 1-year-old, not 1-year-old. Like my father. Right. I don't like kiss my dad on the lips.
I said with your baby.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. But like grown people when they greet their family. I mean, you know, it's like an up north kind of thing to like kiss on the cheek or like an Italian thing or whatever. But no, I'm talking kiss on the lips. I've seen people do it before. It's weird.
I will never forget.
Sorry if this is anyone that you've ever known.
I posted a video though of like me kissing my baby on the lips and you literally DM me and you're like, gag, do you literally do this? And I was like, yep, sure do.
This is, I don't know, do you kiss your dog on the lips too? People who do that, I'm like, you might have a disease now. Like, at least you're not going to have a disease from kissing a family member on the lips. That's just a little weird. But people who are doing it with animals is weird too to me.
I mean, I'm not like,
I do not kiss animals.
Yeah. But I mean, I would like kiss my dog's head.
No, right. That on the lips I'm talking. They're opening their mouth with their tongue and licking your face. Oh and you're God. Like, yeah,
no,
baby,
I don't want the dog
me.
To lick my face. No, that's true. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. No, I don't kiss family members. No. That's a no. I definitely kiss my babies.
Rebecca, I know. It's a little more acceptable, a baby, because it's.
Yeah.
You cannot resist them. I know.
Yeah. If there's anything I've earned in life, it's to kiss my baby on their face.
Right. Their lips. Okay. What about a dog? Would you kiss a dog, dog on the lips?
No, I've never even had a dog. I'm like such a loser. I've never had a pet other than a fish.
Never had
definitely
a pet?
Kiss
a
my fish on the lips. Never had a pet.
Do your kids not like beg you daily?
They not daily, but I mean, they do. Poor Hunter. He had two dogs when we got married and they both died within like the first year of our marriage. Not from me. I did not kill his dog.
Just need to clarify.
Oh, that sounded really bad. So we've just never gotten one since. I don't know. Yeah. Never grew up with a pet.
So don't have to worry about her transmitting diseases via kissing dogs.
Well, I will say Nan and I do kiss on the lips right now. Very light peck because anytime I have lipstick on, she's like, mommy, give me some. And she like puckers up. So I give her like the tiniest peck and then she like rubs her lips together and she's so excited to have lipstick on even though you like can't tell at all. So, but
well,
I'll
Ellie will like
it out, Lauren.
So cute.
It must be from Disney movies. Like Ellie will be like, grab my face and be like, I want to kiss you on the lips. And I think because they see it in like Rapunzel or something, you know, like that's what they do when their true loves kiss or something. And I'm like, we just don't do that. And then sometimes she'll be like, I want to see you and dad kiss on the lips. Like it's like moving it from like cartoon world to real life.
And
I'm like, you and I don't do
dad
that.
On the lips.
Yes, that's the one person that I'm going, that we should all do that with. But
no, in front of, when Ellie demands it, do you?
Oh, yeah, of course. As long as it's not another family member or a dog.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay, I cannot wait to, I can't wait to pull Instagram about this. All right, Amy, I want to know what boils your blood because you just seem very positive to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good to know. Okay, so I don't know if this is going to make me sound like snooty, but I'm just going to say it. So once I started working, as much as I started working, I hired a cleaning lady to come to my house and clean my house like twice a month. And it really became a blood boiler for me. Like when people would come over, they would always comment on like, oh, like your cleaning lady did this, or your house looks so nice. Oh, this must've been like your cleaning lady or whatever, whatever. And then even like my family started to do it, like my kids. So every time the beds were made or every time like laundry was folded, they'd be like, oh, was Lisa here? Which she was wonderful. And it just, after a while, it started to like make me crazy, like where I would like kind of lash out at my family. I remember like kind of lashing out at Hunter once because he like asked if Lisa had been there that day. I'm like, no, she comes on Wednesday. Like, of course, this was me. Like, I lost all credit for all cleaning in my entire house because I had a cleaning lady who's, she's now long gone. So life is miserable. But that was a real blood boiler for me.
So it's like you enjoyed her coming and she helped out, but then everyone just assumed you did nothing now. Like you're still doing the day to day, but now you get no credit.
She only came twice a month and she would do the deep cleaning, like clean the windows and mop the floors.
Right.
So everything else in the house was me. And it just made me like insane after a while. Like I would be like, okay, well, for the future, I'm not telling anyone I have a cleaning lady.
Truly. I don't think like spouses really understand either, like how much we are constantly like wiping surfaces. You know, someone poops on the side of the toilet bowl, so you gotta like scrub some crust out. Like, I mean, there's just so much. I told someone the other day, literally this weekend, I was like, they were like, oh, are you like in that phase? You're really tired. You got little kids. I was like, yeah, I love little kids, but I'm just ready to be like less acquainted with every person in my house's bowel movements. Like, I share a bathroom with my husband, so I gotta know when he's, you know, working something out. All three of my kids still need help wiping. I'm like, I just need to not be a part of this.
And even yourself, you don't get to go by yourself.
Never.
I
literally sent Thomas a picture the other day of me trying to go to the bathroom and I'd been back there for maybe 3 seconds. And my youngest like came in, climbed, it was standing on top of the squatty potty, which we're big squatty potty fans. I don't know if you have one, Amy.
We have a squatty potty.
Love it. Changed my life.
But that's in your personal space.
Right. I literally took a picture and I was like, just a nice moment of peace for me. Like here with Rob on the squatty potty. Like he brought me a book.
But why do they only bring you a book to read and your husband can go to the bathroom for 30 minutes in peace and no one goes to look for him or bothers him?
I don't know.
Hunter always says it's because he's smart enough to close or to lock the door. He's like, you have to lock the door.
We don't have a lock.
Mine doesn't have a door. Like a slider. Yeah, that's me too. I just said mine doesn't have a door. I do have a door on my bathroom. I don't have a lock.
All right. So note to self in my new house is get a lock on my bathroom door.
Yes. It'll change your life. Okay. Oh, and to build on top of the house cleaner, I think like the main point of that too was you start, like I would kind of feel maybe like judgment from it a little bit. And I was like, you know what? Like, I remember listening to this business, I don't know, some guy on Instagram or something. He was saying, as soon as you can delegate the most basic of chores out, once you become like a working mom, like you need to do that right away. And the very first thing would be house cleaning. And I remember telling this to Hunter at one point too. I'm like, you know, no one's ever going to come up to you and criticize you and say, you got someone to organize your shop because he's a woodworker. You got someone to organize all your tools for you. And he would be like, of course, like I'm a business owner. Like I don't have time to be organizing tools. And I'm like, it's just so interesting that as like a mom and because I'm in the house and, you know, I'm a business owner, there's like this judgment around like me being smart and hiring an employee and delegating out work when really like, I just feel like that would be like a sign of someone who like knows what they're doing, you know, like, oh, what a smart lady, you know?
Preach.
And now it's like, oh, did someone come and like help you clean today or whatever? Like, no, I paid someone money to come and like handle some work that I can't get to today. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yes.
It really just burns my biscuits.
It does. It's like, we should call this burnt biscuits instead of blood boilers.
Right.
But yeah, I agree. I think there's such like a double standard or just like, you know, I went out of town in February. Lauren and I went on a like a work retreat together for podcasters. And I cannot tell you every single person who's going to watch your kids while you're gone. I was like,
my husband,
their dad.
But like, he goes on work trips like 3 or 4 times a year. No one's ever asked him who's watching the kids because it's me. It's just such a double standard. Okay.
It is.
My blood boiler is so random, but I don't know why this bothers me so much. Okay. I don't know. Are you even on Facebook, Amy?
I am technically, but no, I haven't been on there for like 2 years. But yeah, okay. There's a Facebook account there.
Same. I'm on Facebook for the sake of like, I have a business page and then I'm in a couple of different like business Facebook groups and a couple like mom groups. So I like personally don't post on Facebook at all. But I was on there today because I was looking something up in a business group, and on my feed, I saw in a mom group, I hate when people post photos in a mom Facebook group and are like, hey mamas, can anyone help Photoshop this for me? Like, I have this picture of my family. Can someone Photoshop this guy out of the background? And then like 36 people commented on it and do it. And I'm like, I just feel like who has the time? It's so insane to me that like my first instinct when I would take a picture would be like, let me go and see if I can just hijack someone's free skills. Also, I can't believe all the people who are doing it. Like all the people who are maybe like have that skill, like a photographer who are like, yeah, I'll go do this for free. I'm like, what?
Okay. But here's the thing. They're not really photographers, I think. I see this a lot in, I joined like a Disney group before I went to Disney, and that is, I need to leave it probably for my own mental health. I'm not going to Disney anytime soon, but I'm in it like laughing at things like that. Like, you know, everyone's the picture in front of Cinderella's castle. Literally, it happens all the time. Can you Photoshop all the people out of here? I just want me and Cinderella's castle. And I think people are just opening up an app and like blurring out a person in the background. That's what I'm like, I don't know how much real work they're doing.
Other people try, or like, it just feels like something you could Google, like, and find some sort of site that would probably do it for you. Like,
but people are doing it. So why not just ask free? And 36 people, like you said, responded.
The one I saw the other day, someone literally posted like, they had like a family of like 6. They posted 8 photos and they basically wanted, and different kids were smiling different photos, and they wanted someone to like Photoshop the faces all into one where it was like the best compilation. I'm like, who cares? No one's going to look at your Christmas card and be like, wow, that kid number 3 really didn't get their teeth out in that smile. Like, I just feel like the commitment.
I'm just thinking of what photo. The bad ones could look like. Like in superimposing a smile on top of a kid's face, or like trying to like stretch it bigger or something. Like, it's not going to look good.
I know. And honestly, I don't know why I care as much. I just need to get out. Like, I saw it this morning and I just was like, why? I hate this so much.
Because you didn't want to be on Facebook in general. And then you're like, the audacity of these people just asking for free professional services.
I know.
Exactly.
I really, really hate when people try to like hijack people's skills. So I get what you're saying though, Lauren. It probably is just a bunch of amateur hours.
Yeah. I mean, I guarantee they're like using Facetune, InShot. Like, let's give a tutorial to the moms of like, here are some apps that you could just try and play around with. But I get it. Like, if you don't have to do that and people are going to do it for free,
yeah,
and you get it a little bit better than what you could have done on your own, why not?
Yeah. Take advantage of it. All right. Let's do a 30-second therapy. Amy, do you have anything encouraging, any wisdom to share with us?
I do. It's not my own wisdom.
It never is. It's perfect.
Does that matter? Okay.
No.
Okay, great. So do you all know who Rafael Nadal is? He's like one of the top, I think he's number 4.
Tennis player.
Top male tennis players in the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's from Spain. So his uncle was his coach for years and years, and now he's training others. But so this was something his coach said, and it's like, I just friggin' love it. And it says, a person's main talent in life is their capacity to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think what I love so much about that is, and so many conversations I have with friends or just other people I know, or even just with myself, it's, we're so quick to accept something in ourself that can change. So for example, like with me, it would be like, oh, I just can't get up before 6 a.m. And so we make that statement about ourselves, and then that's how we live based off that statement for like the rest of our life, even. Or like, oh, I just, you know, I'm bad at schedules. I'm bad at scheduling, or I'm bad at whatever it is, you know, managing money. And it's like, no, like the like, you know, the biggest skill or talent you have in life is your capacity to learn. And we can learn to do anything. Mm. You know, like we were all nobody once, and now someone's, you know, flying to the moon and like operating on brains, and you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to box myself in or to say like I'm not capable of learning something.
I love that.
Me too. And I think there's so much value in that. Like, I like being around people who, like, I want to be part of a team with someone who likes to learn, not someone who just says like, I can't do that. That's like not in my wheelhouse or something. Like, yes, there are going to be things that are going to be harder for you to perfect or to make a habit out of, but, and there will be things that like, I will never go to the moon or do brain surgery. Like, that's,
right, exactly.
Yeah. That's not my like aspiration either, but like, something like waking up earlier, I could do it if I really put my mind to it and do it. But
and you could operate on brains if you wanted to.
I don't know that anyone would want me to. But think it like, and we're talking to a lot of like business owners and stuff. Everyone started from nothing. I actually thought about this when I was just driving down the street, like looking at like there was a bakery and a restaurant. I have a friend who just opened a restaurant, and I'm like, all of these people, like, chances are most of them didn't go to school like to be business owners or entrepreneurs. Like, they figured it out along the way. And I hope that's inspirational to other people who might be listening, thinking, oh, I wonder if I could like make a little cash from this, or I wonder how to start this. And I'm always, people will text me after these episodes and be like, hey, I have this idea. Will you like help me think about it? And I'm like, yeah, I like love brainstorming stuff like that, because we all started from nowhere, from nothing.
Mm. Exactly.
Everything is figure outable.
Everything. That's so true. Yeah, I was so scared to start my business. And my other friend, Lauren, who convinced me to start doing this, tried for 2 years before I started. And I'm so glad I started when I did in 2016. But I'm like, dang, I could have started in 2014 when she told me to, you know, and like think about how much further ahead. But I'm so grateful I did. But yeah, I feel like the learning curve of things can be scary. But like, your ability to be willing to learn is huge. I hate too when people like, I see the abuse of this a lot with the Enneagram, people being like, oh, well, I mean, I'm just like a seven, so I can't, you know, make a spreadsheet.
Exactly.
Or like, I'm a
but
one.
But sevens also love being seven. So we're not just going to say I'm just a seven. It will be an excuse for certain things.
Oh, we
but like,
I
always
point.
Love being a seven.
That's true, because you're so fun. But I feel like for me as a one, I hear a lot of other ones being like, well, I just, everything's black and white, or there's a right or wrong. I feel like I felt liberated learning about the Enneagram, because I was like, okay, no, this is now pushing me to live in gray, because I know that my struggle is to want to be black and white. I need to learn to be more open-handed, live in gray, all that kind of stuff. So I love that. I don't think I have anything I could even add to that. Lauren, do you have any other 30-second therapy?
I don't. And again, as our resident therapist, I usually feel like I fall short in this category, because I'm like, either I'm not learning, I'm not talking to enough people, I'm not, but I always enjoy hearing other people's, because I'm like, oh, that is so good. I'm encouraged by that. Thank you for bringing your therapy onto our show, because
I know, I love
it.
That.
You know, I'll take credit for that any day.
I love it.
That's good.
Okay. All right. So next we're going to do a little lifesaver, something that's saving your life right now. And I'm just going to say, I think this kind of goes with like, this actually comes from a Lazy Genius podcast episode. I don't know if you listen to her, Kendra Adachi, but she did.
But she's someone we aspire to be, and she's changed our lives. So if you haven't heard about her, then now you have.
Now you have. So she did an episode a while ago that was almost like a Q&A. It was like an Ask Me Anything episode. And people like basically like people were just sending her their problems, and she was being like a Dear Abby and trying to like answer their things. But so much of like her process in answering them was like, okay, but like, let's get down to the root here. Like, you just gave me a giant problem. Let's like drill down what the smallest thing is. And I learned like, okay, so circling back, this is coming full circle with a cleaning lady. I have a cleaning lady who comes once a month for a deep clean. But like you said, like there's a lot of regular cleaning that's happening that other time. I hate cleaning my bathrooms. I literally hate cleaning my bathrooms. And I think I realized, though, the hardest part for me is just getting started. Like, I'm never going to be like, oh, I have a spare 5 minutes, I should go do this. Like, I'll never do that. But so I was like, the real problem is I need to eliminate all barriers so that when I do have 5 minutes, I'll actually go scrub the toilet bowl. And so what I did a couple months ago is I just went to like Walmart, and I got little like you have in college, like a shower caddy. And I got a shower caddy for each bathroom. And I put like toilet bowl cleaner, like Windex, Clorox bleach wipes, and like a rag in there. And I put it in the little sink area, under sink area in each of our bathrooms. And now it's so nice because I'll just be, you know, sitting there giving my kids a bath and I'll be like, oh, the sink's like kind of like there's toothpaste crust in here. Oh, the wipes are literally 3 inches from my hand. Grab the cleaning wipe, do it right then. Like it eliminates the, and I can't tell you now, like my regular like bathroom cleanup time is when my kids are in the bath and I'm in there, or a kid's, you know, working out a number two and they're waiting. They're like, mom, stay here. Keep me company. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to clean out the shower real quick with this sand because it's all right there. And so I feel like that's saving my life right now because it's just making, it just made something that seemed so terrible to me, like just very manageable.
Yeah, yeah, I've never heard about working out a number two. I've never heard it put that way before.
That's what Amy pulled from your lifesaver.
Oh, yeah. No, very convenient. Yes, I agree.
That can be the title of this episode, working out a number two. No, I have one child who will remain nameless that, they like to hold it all day. And so then things get kind of backed up. So then they kind of have to sit there for a little bit, you know?
Uh-huh. So. Oh, yeah.
So I'll say
working it out.
Yeah,
there you go.
Working it out.
Yeah. I'll say in reference to the cleaning stuff, like I have my closet that has all the cleaning stuff in it, but I find it in a similar way a lot easier for me to have. I mean, I have toilet bowl cleaner in each of the bathrooms, or at least two of the three bathrooms, and then Clorox wipes in all the places I'm going to need them because of that. Like I'm just going to keep going back and forth. I can do it real quick. We need to do it all the time. We're cleaning those things all the time. Sinks, toilets. So I do have a caddy. I should maybe move that around my house. I do have it in my cleaning closet.
Love it. Love it.
All right. What you got, Lauren?
I've been watching a lot of TV. So I guess that's what's saving my life lately. I went through, Indian matchmaking and then Jewish matchmaking, which
so good.
So good. I'm
you watch them too?
Oh my God. Hunter and I watched them on our anniversary trip. back from the beach and we're like, let's put on this matchmaking show. Yeah.
I am so into it. And I feel like Lauren's the only other person I know into it. So I'm just thrilled to hear that you're into it.
I loved it. It's so like niche cultural that I love about it. I'm like, for the Indian one, I mean, we just watched season three. And so, you know, I feel very invested. I will say I did not like as much storyline about the matchmaker. I don't really care that much about her. I just want to like see them get matched. And then the Jewish one, I thought it was so interesting to see like the whole spectrum. And there's a little bit of this in the Indian one too, but the whole spectrum of like actually what you're looking for in the Jewish partner. Like you want a Jewish partner, but like, you're not really practicing. You don't really care that much, to the like very conservative, follow all these rules kind of thing. It was so interesting to see like within this one cultural niche, like that there are still so many different people that you might have a preference to be matched with. And I loved it. I mean, I was hanging on every episode. I will say too, I don't like how I don't know who they ended up with. They left me cliff hanging. I needed to know.
Zero closure.
Zero closure. And then I went like 180 degrees the other direction. And I watched the MH370 documentary, docuseries, three episodes about the plane that disappeared, the Malaysian Airlines plane. So many theories. I was like talking to my husband about it. I was like, you need to watch this with me.
Again, zero closure.
Right.
Right. Like, and I'll let people watch it and share their thoughts, but
yeah.
I mean, every single time, this is just my personality too, but every single time a new conspiracy would come up, I'd be like, that's it. That's what it is.
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm all into that one. And then the next one, I'm like, it's that. So I was very into that. And then the Boston Marathon bombing, I watched that one too. And there were so many things behind the scenes that I didn't realize happened. Both of them are three episodes. And so you can watch them over the course of a couple of days, but very interesting. Just I was into it. I know those are like dark and sad things, but I don't know. I went from reality TV to dark and sad things. So I've covered my spectrum for the last couple of weeks.
I love a good docuseries.
Me
I get
too.
So into it. And it really is fun when you have a show you're watching, especially if you're watching it with your spouse. Like you get the kids down, you're like, let's go.
Yeah.
You know?
So true. That. We watched, we really got into the Tour de France, which was on a whim, and we were kind of desperate to find something. I was like, let's just try it. And then we were like obsessed with it. And it was a little docuseries, same thing. Like you just get so into it, you know?
Well, they've done it with all the sports now, with the golf one and the Formula One.
I love
the new tennis one.
Yeah, Point Break. That's where this quote came from that I shared.
The tennis one.
Point Break. Yeah, it's really good. We're in the middle of that one. Like even tonight, I was like, you're not allowed to watch that while I'm recording the podcast.
Well, and you know it's good when the like intro to it like scrolls across your Netflix and it feels like a highlight reel that you're seeing, like, I mean, not that I'm watching ESPN, but those catch my eye, you know, like I'm invested and I need to know what happens next. And you hear more about the characters, the people and the story behind it. So I'm into it.
All right, Amy, what's saving your life right now?
All right. My biggest lifesaver, hands down, is an air fryer. I know I'm like way late on the air fryer train. We just bought one, but I have diet restrictions. Now on top of that, Rebecca knows this, but my husband is on these like insane diet restrictions right now. And so like, I've heard so many people talk about like, oh, I'm trying to figure out another way to make chicken. And I'm like, that's for chumps. Like I'm trying to figure out another way to make broccoli, another way to make carrots. Like it's insane. And so I finally like bit the bullet and bought this, and it's revolutionized our vegetables. What can I say?
Oh my, I never even thought about doing vegetables in it.
Oh my God. That's all. Yeah. Vegetables, meat. I mean, what else do you put in there? I don't even know. I guess
I feel like everyone I know does like potatoes and like salmon.
Oh yeah.
You know,
that's true.
Potatoes. Well, tell us an example.
Potatoes.
What is something that you're doing with the vegetables? That's like, because I don't love vegetables. So maybe you will make me like it by the way that you're making it.
100%. I'm into this. All right. So our favorite thing right now is to air fry mushrooms and onions together. Mm. Oh, your face. You don't like mushrooms.
No, not
They're
a mushroom
really
good
fan. For you.
I like them.
That's okay. So you just get a bowl and you put a little olive oil in there and you just coat everything really good with olive oil, salt and pepper, maybe some garlic, and you just air fry those suckers. They turn into like caramelized. They're just crunchier and more caramelized. So like the flavor is like richer. And when all you can eat is fruit and vegetables and meat, I don't know. It just makes a world of difference just to have that little crunch, you know. You can't have like a chip or a cracker or a, I don't know. We're in a very depressing stage with our food right now.
I know.
It's temporary.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not forever.
It's not.
I would love to get on the air fry train, but like, I literally don't have room in my house for another device. But I've
it's
said,
huge.
Same.
Yeah. I know,
it's like the size of a standing mixer. So it's a commitment.
I know. And so I'm thinking maybe when we build our house in like a year, I can try, but. The big things.
And you can get one that's like interchangeable with a like toaster oven too. Like it could do the same thing. I use my toaster oven all the time.
Well, we have our toaster oven does have air fry, but we don't think it's very good.
It's not the same. Okay.
I don't know, because I don't know what a regular air fry is.
I have heard they're different, but I don't know. I can't vouch. But I will say I got the smaller one. It's the little Ninja. So it's about... Yeah. You know, I don't know. It's not super, super big. I was able to just get rid of like a stack of bowls.
Yeah.
Like mixing bowls. And I just put that there now in the cabinet. So.
Okay.
It's small, but it works. Yeah.
You made it work.
Love it. Yeah, okay.
Made it work.
Well, let's do some business banter. And let's start with, I want to hear your origin story. So like, how did this all begin?
Oh man, let me tell you. I feel like it was such a whim, which is so crazy. Because before I became an artist, I was a photographer. So I was a wedding photographer
for
years
that.
And then, you know, kind of morphed into a family photographer. And I did that for 8 years. And it was something that I really, really loved it. And I don't know. I always say I kind of had like an early life crisis. And this was in 2020. I had just given birth to my third. And he was born in 2019, but I had just given birth to him. He was about 6 months old in 2020. And I don't know. I just had like reached a point in my life where I was like, you know what? Like I've walked through a lot of like really hard things in the last several years and life has been a little bit disappointing. And even though I love doing photography, I don't know, like my dream has always been to be an artist. It's always been that, but I was always too scared. It was just like such an unknown career choice that I just like could never pull the trigger on it. And so like, I don't know. Like literally just one day I was like, I mean, I could try.
Oh, okay. So did you just like when you say you just like really, I'll try, like, what does that look like? You just got a couple canvases? Like, what happened?
Yeah, I didn't own one painting. I didn't have one completed painting in my possession. I did not have art supplies. So yeah, that's what it was. Like, I was like, I'm going to figure this out, because if I could, like, this is my dream job. So honestly, like, the best decision I made was that I found like a company online. They're kind of like a coaching company, like kind of like what your husband does, but it's ran by two women and they're artists, and they started a company called The Studio Source, and anyone can sign up to be a part of this, and they mentor you on how to make art a business, like how to do the business side of art. And so when I saw that, I was like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it the right way. Like, I'm going to invest my money into this program and like learn all the back end on how to run a business. So it was actually 6 months of doing the behind the scenes work, working with this company before I even put out my first piece of art.
I think that's so smart.
What is that called?
It was
again?
Like the best decision. The Studio Source.
The Studio Source. And so was it a membership? Was it a course you paid for? Like, what was it?
It's a membership. Yeah. Okay. So you can choose. When I started, I did like their monthly membership. It was $80 a month. Super affordable. I mean, it can sound like a lot, I guess, if you have no money at all, but for where I was at the time and I'd been working, and I was a photographer, like, I was like, this sounds super reasonable in terms of gaining all of this knowledge. And then after a year, you can buy into like a lifetime membership kind of thing, which I did 100% without even question. And it's incredible. It's incredible. So it's an online course. The amount of content that they have online, it's a lot. It's a lot of content. Mm-hmm. So, and I've gone through it like twice now. You could go through it a third time, a fourth time. I'm always learning something new.
But we always say, I was just gonna say, we always say that when you put money behind some sort of professional development or training or something, like, you're so much more likely to follow through with it and do it. And I think that is really smart of you not to be like, I'll just figure it out. Cause like, we don't have that much time to be just figuring out a new career path or something. Like, somebody who already knows what they're doing to tell me some of these things, like, you could figure out the painting and the artistic side of things, but if you don't have somebody kind of teaching you some of that behind the scenes stuff, it's not going to be profitable. And then you're not going to see growth and find success in it being a business if you don't want it to be just a hobby.
100%. I have people reach out to me all the time asking me about The Studio Source and if I think they should do it. And I always say the same thing. And that is 100%. It's worth every dime, but you are going to have to put in so much work. Like, you're going to have, it's all like self-driven work too, because it's online. So you can ignore it if you want. You know what I mean? Like, you have to really like put like the pedal to the metal on it and just like dive in and like go head first.
Did you stop doing all photography stuff when you started learning about the business side of being an artist?
I did not. So I continued probably, I want to say like 6 months. I remember at some point I put out like an official post on Instagram, like, hey, I'm not going to be doing photography anymore. And that was like a really big decision for me, because I've been doing it for 8 years and I'm, you know, it was something I loved. I still love it, but I have not done photography since, haven't picked up a camera and done one photo shoot since.
Wow.
Were there a couple of clients that like you'd had that were regulars that were like still trying to sneak in after you said no?
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, will you just take our Christmas card picture? And we're, what did you do?
Like, I said sorry? No. I said no. Yeah, I said no. And I would, you know, I would say, or, you know, I have a friend that he always does our family photos. So I would just send them to him and say, you know, see if he has availability.
I'm proud of you.
This is
going to be hard.
Yeah.
Did you have the same social media account and you just started posting different things? Or did you like do a lot of social media with photography before? Or how did that work?
Yeah. So I had an Instagram account and Facebook for the photography, and it was okay. I mean, I never had a lot of followers. I never understood social media. I was never good at it. So when I started my art business, I started a whole new Instagram account. And that was advice that I took from this mentorship group that I was doing. They're like, 100%, it needs to be its own account. Start from scratch. It's okay if you have zero followers.
That's awesome. Cool. Okay. So when you, after you said you did it for about 6 months before you felt like you really got started. So when you started, did you have like your website? Like what did like the hard start look like?
Yeah. So for me, everyone can do it differently. And there are other artists who do not do it the way that I did it, but that is how I chose to do it. So when I started, everything was done. So the website was done. I had my, you know, my email newsletter list, like ready to go. My Instagram account was set up, all of my, you know, the back end, your business license and your text and all, everything was just ready to go. And also had worked out my schedule and childcare, everything. So that when I was like, all right, I'm going to like launch my first collection and sell it, hopefully, like knock on all the wood, people will want to buy my art. Everything was done. Yeah, all the groundwork was laid.
Okay. So what did your husband Hunter think when you got started? Like, was he like, do it? Or did he think you should still do photography? Or what did he think?
He was like, you crazy lady. No, he didn't say that. This is my favorite thing about Hunter is that he is so incredibly, like oddly, weirdly supportive of me because I've changed my career like multiple times. This would not be the first time that I've done this. But I think it's more than that. He just supports me. Like he really truly believes in me. Like when I bring an idea or I present something, he's like, no one else could do it better than you. And so he's always got my back. I know he's insane. Like even on this last trip we were talking about, we just went on a little family vacation and I was talking about how, you know, some other dreams and stuff I have. And he's like, oh yeah, you haven't even got started yet. Like you're not even done. You've barely dipped your toes in the water. Like he's such a support. I mean, incredible. Yeah.
I love that.
But yeah, he was all for it. He was 100% on board.
Do you feel like, because I'm like not artistic at all, so I could be totally wrong, but so I know, I think you mentioned your husband does custom woodworking. I feel like you're both like artists. Does he see himself that way? Or I mean, obviously you're both business owners too. Like, do you feel like y'all's brains like work similarly and because of what you both do for a living, or do you feel like you're just really different?
No, we're very similar. He's very actually artistic. And he's honestly like his biggest talent is he's a musician. So he has been a drummer since he's been a drummer since he was a young boy. He actually played in the Beaufort Orchestra for years and years, talented. And then he played, you know, he played in a heavy metal band through college. I did not love fit it. In the crowd. I was like, I'll video. I'll be the videographer.
Right, was that when you were trying to move to the Ukraine?
This was before we were really together. And I was just his little buddy. But yeah, so he's part of a group called the Lavender Cadavers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really, it sounds like you were a groupie is what you were. You followed the band. You're the number one.
I
did.
I was like, you know what?
Not really dating, but there.
That name sounds like Andy Dwyer from Parks and Rec when they keep renaming their band. That sounds like one of those names. Like
Rat Mouse. I mean, it was Mouse Rat. The band sounded how the title is. Like it was just like screaming. And I don't know, just like not my scene at all, but this is like what he did. So he's very artistic, very creative. He like sketches all the time. He's like he does beautiful little like sketches and stuff on the side. I don't know. He's very artistic and creative.
Would you think y'all would ever collab on anything?
I think so. I mean, maybe this is like going way ahead, but I mean, some of our dreams is to like really get into hospitality. Like it's something I wish I would have gone to college for was hospitality and management. Mm-hmm.
It's not too late.
Right?
It's not too late. You can still learn. Yeah.
But we really love the idea of providing like experiential design. So it's like interior design, but it's curated so perfectly that the experience is like very similar to what my art is, which is it kind of transports you a little bit. Mm. Like that's what drives me as an artist is transporting people to like sort of like an ethereal realm. Mm. And that's something that we talk about all the time that we want to do together.
So, and Rebecca, isn't that like the opposite of how you think? Like that's so gray and creative.
I'm
like
so
I'm like
concrete.
Rebecca would never do that. Like,
but you know what?
Idea.
I've always told Thomas, like one of my favorite things in the world is to see people doing like what God intended for them to do or like how God has gifted them. And so I like love hearing you talk because it's like you are so equipped to do this. And so it's just so, and I just love seeing people talk or do like what they're passionate about. So I just think this is so cool.
Amen. I'm with you on that.
And when it's different from you, you're like, I'm so glad there are people who are different than me who can like fill this need and do this thing because it couldn't ever be me.
Like if you just gave me art supplies and told me to make something, I would try. Like I would not know what to do.
Well, that would be your art. You could just put paint on paper and then my cry tears. Onto it. Yeah.
Just
and then
paint sell my your tears. Tears as
while listening to Lavender Cadaver.
Yeah.
What is
that would bring you to tears.
What is the term in art, like my mode of art or what is it would be tears or my medium your of medium. Art and tears.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I think we've just created an incredible product. I think we should start a separate Instagram account for you.
Let's start a collab and you make resin sculpture that looks like my tears. Okay.
Yeah.
Start next week when I'm in the middle of my move. Okay.
Yeah. No. Okay.
Back to you, because this is not about me. Okay, so when you got started, were you doing your sculptural art or were you doing something different?
I was doing something completely different. Let me tell you, I had kind of like a identity crisis a little bit. So I've always loved the ocean and I've always wanted to paint water. I feel like water is so just crazy. Like if you just look at water, you're like, there's so many colors. It's so reflective. Like how do you capture this? And so when I first started, when I like went on Instagram and I was like, I'm an artist now. And I was like announcing myself to the world. I had like a little painting next to me that was like of an ocean scene, you know, like this is what I want to do. And it was very quickly, I want to say like within 2 weeks that I was like, this is not what I want to do. Like, I do not want to just be another, not that there's anything wrong with it, but for me personally, like painting ocean scenes that you can't tell that this was made by me. You know what I mean? Like it just looks like another painted ocean. So very quickly my work evolved. And when I started, I knew that I wanted to capture water and that I wanted it to be textural, but it was like a year and a half to 2 years before I really got into the sculptural work that I do now.
So you've only been doing the sculptural stuff for like a year?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Because when I literally met you last year, before I met you, Tom's like, yeah, Hunter's going to be there with his wife and you're going to love her. And he's like, she does this amazing sculptural water stuff. He's like, we got to get one for like the new house as like a, you know, celebration. We move in. I was like, so I just thought you'd been doing it forever.
No. So
that's so crazy.
It is so crazy. Yeah. I was doing other artwork before that. Yeah. So if you go back on my Instagram, you can see how I evolved. Like I always say, like my evolution as an artist was live, meaning like,
in front of everyone.
Yeah, I was starting at nothing. I didn't have a painting to even like put on Instagram. So I started at that point and then just evolved in front of everyone's faces. And it was either loved or hated, you know. And fortunately, where I landed right now is people love it. So I'm thankful.
I was going to say, like, how has it been received? And are you able to make stuff as quickly as people want it? Or does it feel overwhelming? Or do you feel like it's still at a manageable place?
I definitely cannot keep up. So I think that that's a great problem to have as an artist. I feel like any artist would like pay money to be in my shoes. So for that, I'm thankful. It doesn't feel overwhelming to me because I feel like I control my schedule and I control my collections. So for me, like I can put out the art that I can put out for now. And, you know, if you're wanting to buy the art and you're able to snag it on, you know, collection launch day, then like great, great for both of us. So I think that that's like a fantastic place to be as an artist.
That is. And I'm sure there's different models and stuff, and I know nothing about this, but what percentage of your art is like you're launching a big collection versus you're doing something custom and a commission that somebody reached out to you to ask for?
I would say it's very easily 50-50. So I work in cycles, which again, this was advice given to me by the studio source that I immediately snagged and said, these women know far better than I do about how to sell art. And so I immediately adopted their selling cycles. And so yeah, they highly encourage, you know, you do a collection cycle. This is a collection of artwork that you put out all on your own. It's whatever you want it to be. And then you can do a commission cycle. And so that's where you have contracts and people sign contracts with you and you create artwork specifically for them, obviously inspired by your own artwork. Yeah. So easily 50-50.
So I'm so intrigued by this because I am not an artist at all, but I do like think of myself as somewhat of a creative in my own capacity, and that like part of what I do, I really have to be inspired. Like I can't just like sit down and be like, okay, create a lab about XYZ content and just like come up with an idea. Like I have to be in the mood. And so I can have a hard time because I like to be very scheduled and things like that, but then I can hit some blocks and then, or like last week, I got so excited about something. I spent 4 days doing something I should have done in one day because I just was like loving it and just kept, if you give a mouse a cookie, just kept going and going. So I would love to know, because you are like creative exponent 20 to me, like how do you balance that feeling of like being inspired and running with that versus like making sure you get your commissions done? Like how do you manage that?
I would say I relate to you like majorly, like how you're describing yourself. I would totally describe myself that way. Like there are times where I feel like I can just hyper focus on a project. I'm so excited about it. I can't even sleep at night. I'm like dreaming about it, you know, just like going all in on it. And then there are other times where I feel burnout. I feel exhausted. I feel like I cannot even open my inbox. Like I don't want to read another email. I don't want to answer any more questions. And so it's definitely just where like the discipline comes in, you know, like because I have such a limited amount of time in the studio every day, I know that this deadline, this, you know, very specific deadline is coming up. Like if I don't kick it into, you know, whatever gear, then like you're not going to meet your deadline, you know, and then you're going to have disappointed customers and, you know, bad things are going to happen.
You can work under pressure.
Oh yeah. I work best under pressure. Yes.
What do those cycles of collections look like? Like, is it the same every year or does it depend on like when your family vacation is, or are there like better times of year that seasonally people want to buy art, or it's just when you decide it is?
Those are great questions. So this is the first year that I have actually planned out. This was the first year I planned the entire collection cycle out a year in advance. And it was based off of family vacations, our anniversary, birthdays, you know, when family comes to town. I planned it all around that.
I love that.
This was the first year that I offered only one commission cycle. And I did that because commissions take up more time than collections do, because they're so involved. And so I knew that I was going to be very limited in my time. And this is also the first year that I've given myself time off. So I will be taking, see, my last collection of this year is in November. So I'll be taking, you know, December 1st through like January 1st off.
I love that.
And just,
I feel like that's so important for you to recharge as a creative. Like you are being creative all the time. And so if you want to be inspired or like have some daydreams about something else that you want to work on, you have to have that space, that white space to be able to do that.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head with like daydreaming about other projects, because like thankfully these sculptures, they're so loved and they're so in demand. It's really hard for me to find any extra time to experiment in my craft. And that's how I'm most inspired, actually. Like I have to try new things. I just do. And so I'm definitely looking at that window of time as being like, that time I can like behind the scenes sneakily work on some new concepts and new art techniques.
Okay. I want to know, how do you deal, like when you're, you know, onboarding maybe a customer for a commission, do you ever get a customer and you're like, oh, this is a complicated order. Like, and are you able to like offboard them and like eject them in your process? Or like, how is your system set up so that when you intake a commission, you can make sure that it's something you actually want to do and it's a person you want to work with? And like, I guess alongside that, do you get people who like want you to do something that's not necessarily what you is in your wheelhouse? And like, how do you navigate that?
I bet you've had to refine that process as you've done it.
Yeah. So there's definitely like a bit of a vetting process, which I think is really important. And when you're starting out, it's it is, it's a tough learning curve. But I will say that with time, more and more often, I find that people who are reaching out to me about commissions, they love a piece of artwork that they saw that I did. So for me, it's pretty easy to navigate at this point. Most people are coming to me because they want a water sculpture. And so we can really just go through what size, what color, you know, what style of waves. But in the beginning, it was far more tough. And like, absolutely, I've had clients where I've thought like, oh, this is going to be long. This is going to be a long journey to get through this. Just dealing with like personalities, they'd be very specific, you know, they'd want to change it halfway through, just stuff like that. That's very complicated.
They want you to Photoshop something out of the backdrop that you've already done.
Yeah, exactly. Like impose my child's face on. Yeah. Thankfully, I've mostly been pleasantly surprised. I really cannot complain. I mean, I've had a couple of things go wrong, but it was usually my fault that they went wrong. And very, very rarely has it been like a client issue.
That's awesome.
You know what, though? I'm sure as a photographer, you had things go wrong too. And I feel like that's a little scarier. Like if the film,
oh, the wedding.
If it's, yes, wedding photographer, so much pressure. Like at least with an art piece that you're creating, like you could probably figure out how to make it right. You know, like you got a one and done shot with a wedding.
That's so true. If you miss the first kiss, it's over. You know, just pack up and leave. Yeah.
I'm done. Here's your money back.
Oof, the pressure of that feels so stressful. Yeah. All right. Well, we want to know what's something like you never thought would be possible, maybe, or like with your business that you've been able to achieve, or something that you all have been able to do as a family because you started Amy Marcy Art.
Man, so it's really interesting. So the very first year I started, I actually sat down with myself. That sounds very, what is it? Insightful. I sat down with myself and I thought, like, what would be like the craziest thing that you could imagine happening to you through your business? And what I said to myself is if my art was featured on HGTV, that's what I said. And in that first year that happened.
Oh my gosh.
I know. So that very first year, the very first piece of artwork from my very first collection was featured on HGTV through Jenny Mars with Fixer to Fabulous. And then she ended up
using my,
so it was, I want to say it was season, was it season two or season three, episode two, I believe. But the episode was called She Said Yes.
Okay. I'm right.
I'll always like send you the link. Yeah, write this down. She ended up using another piece in that episode. So in the same house, she used two pieces of my art. And it was so cool.
And did you know that ahead of time? Like she had said, hey, I'm going to get this piece. Or she bought them from the collection and then she didn't buy them.
No, yeah, she didn't buy them. So those pieces sold, like they have owners and all of that, but she just used them in the show. And the homeowners, you know, the house that she fixed up, the homeowners had the opportunity to buy them, but they chose not to. And so
rude.
Actually, I know it was such a letdown. Let me tell you, I was like, oh man.
But nobody knows that who's watching it. It's like the behind the scenes, like we're going to keep this furniture, this piece of art.
That's exactly how they do it. So she actually shipped them back to me and then they sold in the collection. So it ended up working out great.
You should have put in like the description, like Jenny Marr thinks this is beautiful.
Oh, I did.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Featured on HGTV.
Yay. It was such a cool experience. And she was just like so phenomenal. Like I couldn't even believe that she took the time to look at my artwork, because really what happened was just a mutual friend of hers and mine, which, you know, I didn't know that he knew her. He just like tagged her on one of my like Instagram posts and she took the time. I mean, I probably had 200 followers to look through my art and was like, oh yeah, I love this. And she reached out to me privately and was like, I would love to use some of your art on my show. And I was like, what? Like, wow. The very first year, I couldn't believe it.
Okay. So is that how your social media grew so much, or was it something else? Or like, how have you grown your social media to be so big?
I know, it's really taken off. So ironically, I did not grow from the HGTV exposure. So that was actually a huge disappointment at the time. I was like, really? 300 followers still? Like, I just couldn't believe it.
But I would say that's like a thing that people get like tempted by. They think if they like do a, this is not you, she came and asked you, like, can I feature this? But you could very easily chase like free collaboration kind of things, like for exposure, and then be well, I didn't really, people see it and stuff, but they're not, it's not translating to social media followers. Like, that's not usually how that happens. Like, Pottery Barn tagged you in this. Like, do you want to use your, like, that's not how people come to find you. They find you through different ways, which I'm sure you're about to tell us.
And it doesn't generate sales.
Right.
Like, it's actually super bizarre to me. I mean, I think it's really cool and it's like a bragging right. Mm. And I was really fortunate because I got to meet her and now her and I have like a relationship. And so there was like all these great benefits that came out of it, but did not increase sales and did not grow my followers. You know, it was just a really cool experience. Mm.
That's cool.
So my Instagram was interesting. In the first year, I think I grew to like 1,000 followers, and that just came from like a lot of hard work and like engagement. And honestly, it was truly exhausting. And the same for like year two, I really just, maybe I grew another 1,000 followers. So it was really this year that it just took off. And honestly, it was just kind of, I think one day, like social media just kind of clicked for me for the first time. Like, I just felt like I could never get anything to work. And I don't know, one day I made a reel, which is those little short form videos. And I just, it was just really simple. It was the one where like, it was such a trend where you just turn your art around, you know, you just start off with like the back of it, you know, now it's like super made fun of because it's like so lame because we've done it so much as artists. But, and I think that I just wrote in the caption, like, not your average ocean art. And it just like, that was the first reel I had take off. It like hit 500,000 views. Like, I couldn't believe that that was possible. And my Instagram account grew several thousand by that one reel. And then since then, I think that for me, the key has been that with every single post, if I'm going to show up on social media, then I need to use that moment to tell people why they're there. Mm-hmm. So it was, I need to say the same thing 100 times over and over and over and put it in the most simple of terms. So me saying, hey, these are resin water sculptures, even that I think is a little complicated for the brain because a lot of people are trying to put together what that means exactly. But when I say like, oh, I make sculptures or I make ocean sculptures that you hang on your wall, right? That's easier for their brain to understand. So just simplifying everything, but repeating everything constantly. Yes. I always say like, if I can just tell people why they're there or why they need to stay there, then I can probably get them to stay.
So you feel like that's the main message that you're telling them over and over again?
Yeah. And I just started making reels like, okay, in this reel, I'm going to just say exactly what I'm doing. Like, it seems so boring, but this is what I'm going to do. I'm peeling my sculpture out of its mold. I'm mounting it to a frame. I'm hanging it on a wall. And like, it would get like 2 million views or something crazy. And so you're just like, oh, I didn't know it was so simple, you know, like right. All this time, like, you don't have to dance or like jump off a dock or like, you don't have to like, just be boring, just be basic. And I don't know. It worked for me. It worked for me.
That's awesome. I feel like we can think too, that we're being so annoying talking about the same things over and over, but we forget that we're just like 1 millisecond on someone's scroll and they see us maybe once every few days. It's not, and even if they see us every day, it's still 1 second on a day. So it's like not that mm-hmm. annoying because they're seeing all these other things too. But you're so right. Just be consistent in your message. I think that's really good advice and not overcomplicating reels too.
Especially if you're growing simple. Like exponentially. Like, I feel like the more you grow, then the faster you grow. Like, it's just like it goes up. But like, people are joining at all times. And so they're coming in at different parts of your journey, whether they were there from your very first collection to just now. Like, they're staying because they want to keep seeing that behind the scenes journey. And if it's for them, then they're going to stick around. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Are you a one woman show? What do you do yourself? What do you outsource? You've said you find a good balance right now because you just work to your capacity, I guess. But what are the things that you're doing and what are the things that other people are doing for you?
Well, as we discussed, I outsource cleaning from time to time. I do that. I'm actually in the market for a cleaning person. So if anyone can recommend one,
send her a DM.
Yes, yes, please do. So I'm mostly a one-woman show. I did hire on an assistant last year. And what she does for me right now is she does a lot of, like, she'll do packaging of art and she'll, you know, take it off to, you know, FedEx or UPS, wherever it's going. So she'll do a lot of the running around for me. She assembles frames. So when frames come in the mail, she puts them together. Right now I have her managing a lot of my social media because I don't have time to be on there. I handle all the DMs, but she'll handle all the comments. And then the next step is to really train her to take over my inbox and manage contracts and do all of those sorts of things. She's about to have her third baby. So there is going to be a little bit of time gap in there, I think, before we really get into that deeper training and that. But that's the goal. That's the goal for sure.
That's awesome.
I think the packaging and framing, like that kind of stuff is so, that would be the first thing I would think you would outsource as an artist too. Like, no, I've done the creative stuff. Like, I don't need to go weigh this at UPS and get it there. Like, no, that feels like something that is very trainable to somebody who wants to do something, be trained and check something off a list, you know?
Absolutely. Yes. That was like the first thing. I was like, I'm done packaging art. Like, I just need someone who's willing to do this for me. Yeah.
Totally. I also want to encourage you too, whenever you do get to the email part, that was something I was really scared to get help with. And it has been like the biggest blessing ever to have help with it. Now I get a lot more personal email, probably like teachers telling me their life story and wanting my advice on it. A lot of Dear Abby type email, which I'm happy to do, but I still do those emails, but there is a lot of people that my friend Allison, who works for me, can like handle, and she does so well. And I thought it was something I could never, email felt so personal to me. I was like, yes. I had someone in my inbox, and it's just been awesome. Well, and I thought people would think it was weird not hearing from me. And then I realized, like, again, people don't care about me as much as I care about me. So like no one cares as long as their question's answered. And so it's great because like in my little email signature, it's like team at Rocket Science, and it's like Allison, teacher support, you know, specialist. And then it's like Rebecca, you know, CEO and founder, or I don't even know what my title is. It might just be like curriculum writer. I don't know. But so then they just hear from us. They don't need to know if it's Allison or Rebecca. It's just us.
Right. That's smart. I like this. Yeah, this is a great idea.
And so that's been good. And then there have been times too, like when I was on maternity leave, where I was like, hey, tell everyone you're Allison, and just say, like, we had a little thing, like a little giblet that was like, hey, Rebecca's on maternity leave. I'll do my best to answer your question. If I don't answer it right, let me know. And we'll save it and she'll get back to you in 3 months. But like, you know, most people, they were able to go back and forth and work it out. And people were so understanding. I think I just thought people cared more than they do, and they didn't. And it's been awesome. So I'm excited for you to experience that one day.
Yeah, I can't wait, honestly.
And you did a lot of, Rebecca, like, training and frequently asked questions, and you knew that it was going to be a slow process for someone to learn how your business works and answer very specific, like, teacher questions that they were going to have and know what to do with them.
Right.
And then I think you knew that, like, okay, if this is going to take a little bit, it's going to pay off. And it definitely has.
Yeah. God bless Allison. She like is not a science teacher, and she has learned like how to answer people's questions about biology, scope, and sequences. And I'm just like, and just like,
that's
amazing.
Know,
Amy, I don't know if you know this. Sorry, Lauren. Lauren's so annoyed. I say this.
She knows because she listens to the podcast.
Lauren does my social media, and like, she'll literally be like, I remember when I was on maternity leave, you'd be like, LOL. I was just like writing a caption about cellular respiration.
Stoichiometry.
Like, what am I doing?
I don't.
Yeah.
But you do a great job. You figured it out.
I know like one thing from high school biology, but I've learned a lot from biology, chemistry, and physical science.
Reading product descriptions.
Yeah. And
okay. That is amazing.
Okay, Amy, what is something that you've done really well that you're proud of? And then maybe what's on the other end of the spectrum, a regret or something that you have had to learn from in your business?
Oh, God. Okay. So I think what I've done really well, I think probably what I'm most proud of in my business is that I've come up with something that's truly original. Mm. So the artwork that I present, I'm confident that like it's from me. You know what I mean? I haven't adopted this concept or these techniques from another artist. Incredibly proud of that. It's a huge problem in the artist world. So many artists copy other artists, and I truly don't think it's malicious. I think that they're inspired, and it's just something that they also want to do. But it's super detrimental to the original creator because they're trying to put out this original artwork that came from themselves as like an extension of themselves. And now others are presenting that as something that they have done. And so then, you know, they sell that. And so you actually lose money. It's just like the whole thing. But that's something that I have done really well, is remained original and have not adopted any other artist's style or form, as far as I know. So knock on wood that that is true.
Yep.
So what I feel like I need to work on is delegating. And I had talked to Lana before this call tonight to ask her how many hours that she's working a week. And right now she's saying anywhere from 2 to 4. And I was like, holy crap, I'm doing a really bad job at giving her enough work, because she wants to work more hours. Like, she's willing. So for sure, like, this is just something that I need to do. I need to learn how to like build out processes and just train her. I think it's so overwhelming to train someone because you think it's going to take forever. And you're like, well, I'll just do it myself. But really, in the long run, I mean, that's just foolish. So,
right. You save yourself so much time later if you just like put in a few hours or something training.
It's just hard to slow down. Like, slow down enough to train someone.
It is. Oh my gosh. Like, yeah. I mean, I get on my email like 4 times a day. So it's like imagining someone else doing that, like me taking the time. They're going to have so many questions up front, right? So they're going to be like, well, how do I answer this? How do I answer that? And it's like, well, over time they will learn, you know, just how you're saying, you know.
Definitely. And they can, you can get like, I have like an FAQ page, or you can just search your old email text, but that's where we put like all of our stuff. And it's like, it's so long now because we've added so many responses to it, but now it's great because like, you know, and then when Allison, my customer service help, went on her maternity leave and then I was doing it a little bit, I like could search through there and not have to reinvent the wheel too, you know, which was nice.
And there are some processes that she has refined in her role that were having to kind of learn, what is she doing now to make this better?
I literally was like, hope we don't get a purchase order while you're gone, Allison, because I don't even know how to do it anymore, because you've like taken it and run with it and you've done so well with it. And I think we got one and I was like, but then she ended up coming back sooner than she thought. So it worked out.
I love it. I love that.
What current like frustrations do you have in your business, or like things that you're trying to work through right now? Maybe other than, you know, systems and delegation, do you have anything else that's like annoying in your business that you're like, I wish I could solve this problem?
Honestly, the biggest pain point for me is shipping. So shipping is so challenging right now, and specifically with art, it's such a liability and it holds so much value. So shipping companies make it extremely difficult to ship. If you pack your own art, even if you buy insurance on it and it arrives damaged, they will not pay the insurance. They say your packaging was not sufficient. So they're basically forcing you to pay them to package your art, which is far more expensive.
And that feels really scary too. You're like, are you going to do it right? I don't know.
Oh yeah. There's so many times I like walk in and leave like 25 pieces of art on like a back countertop. And at this point, I have developed some relationships to where it's like, I do trust them. But like, for example, just recently, I had to ship this huge, it's like a 5-foot by 4-foot piece of art, and it had to go to Colorado and it was under a deadline. And just the process it took to get it there was so like out of this world frustrating that I was just like, I don't understand why this has to be like this difficult. But I think it's just, I think it's hard to figure out how to accomplish something when it's just so challenging. So for me specifically, my art is heavy and a lot of times it's oversized. And this is why so many artists do not do large artworks or heavy artworks. It's because shipping is like a nightmare.
So your next creative venture is you're just going to go into like shipping, freight, logistics for artists. Like, that seems like a need that people have.
How do you?
And there are companies that do that in like larger cities. I had so many cool companies reach out to me and they're like, oh, we do this. We handle like heirlooms and archival this and that. And I'm like, I'm in a small town. I don't even have a local FedEx. So it's totally different here. Like, it's just, it's completely frustrating.
How do you figure out like invoicing for shipping? Like, when you're doing estimates and stuff for people, how do you even know to tell them how much it's going to be to ship?
Well, thankfully, so I can just call my local carrier and say, hey, this is like the location, this is the size and the weight. and they can give me like an estimate. This is for ground or this is express or whatever. Nice. And I can just relay that back to the client.
And that includes like them packaging it and everything.
Mm-hmm. Which I have them do most of the time now. So that's also been something that's kind of been taken off Lana's plate. But I mean, I was just having artwork show up damaged and it not being replaced.
And that's your time.
Yeah. You know, crazy. And no artwork is exactly the same. So I'm trying to like ship something that is very similar. I don't know. It was just the worst. It's just,
that is terrible.
Shipping is like the absolute worst part of it.
Ooh, that does sound terrible. Well, it I think one of our current frustrations, and really, I feel like I really feel it every summer, every single summer, is like balancing mom guilt. And I know you and I work similar hours, like 15 to 20 hours a week. So I would love to know if you ever experienced that. And if so, how you deal with it? Like, how do you balance, like, it's summer, so you want to like be with your kids and do fun summer things, but also like mom runs a business and the business doesn't stop when it just because it's summer. And I don't know, I feel like it's really hard for me.
Oh my gosh, I experience it all the time. I would say every day pretty much on some level. And I think something that's so interesting that I've noticed lately is a lot of times I feel like that the guilt comes from my kids themselves. And I think that's what makes it so hard, because they'll be like, but mom, I want to XYZ. And so I think for me, it's not so much me making myself feel guilty, but like sometimes, of course, they don't mean it intentionally, but they kind of do it. And so then that's when I just feel it the most, right? Because it's like, well, they're voicing to me something that they want that I cannot provide right now. So yeah, that guilt is very much like a part of, yeah, like a daily struggle.
Dang, that's hard. Like, you probably just feel it the most in the summer, because like they want to do fun things. They want you to come take them to do fun things. And yeah. Okay. This time next year, what is one way that you hope your business is different or looks different than it does right now?
I would say like the main thing that I'm really kind of pushing towards right now is providing online classes. Ooh. So this has been like a huge request. People want to learn how to do casting and molding and a lot of the techniques that I use. And although instinctually that can feel like a really bad decision, because it's like, well, you just talked about how, you know, you don't want people copying your work and like this is a problem in the artist world. And although that statement is true, something that is, I think, really important to understand too is like, what do you want to do long term? And I cannot see myself working with resin long term. Resin is a very tricky chemical, and it can be very toxic and it's extremely challenging to work with. And so if I want to be an artist until I'm like 60 or 70 or 80, like I'm not going to be able to be using resin and lifting these heavy artworks and maneuvering all these things around like I am. So I really see myself down the road, hopefully doing some other techniques and art. So I feel good about teaching and providing that for people.
So that's awesome.
That's what I hope to be working towards. Yeah.
Love it.
I think with what you said at the very beginning with y'all's desire for hospitality too, I think y'all are such fun people. Like, you could do something where it's like couples come and you get to build something and you get to make some art.
Yeah.
And you get to do it with Hunter and Amy. And I would sign up for that.
And we would all watch an HGTV show about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, there you go.
That'd be awesome.
I love it. These are good ideas.
Well, Amy, I'm so glad you made the time to come on tonight. And I'm so excited. You have your next collection is launching this Saturday, right?
This Saturday, July 1st. Yeah.
Woohoo. So
tell us about it. Where can people learn about it? What can they expect from it? How can they buy your art?
Sure. So the best way to learn about it is to just go to my Instagram, which is Amy Marcy Art. And I talk about it every day, pretty much. And on there, you'll have all the instructions that you need to be able to like access, you know, my art or to sign up for my newsletter if you want insider access and all those kinds of things. And so what I do is I pick a specific day and a specific time, and I literally make the site live, and all of the artworks that are done are listed on the website and available for purchase directly through the website, including internationally. So if you wanted to, if you're in Switzerland and you want to buy a piece of art, you can just buy it directly through the website. You don't have to go through any sort of special, jump through any special hoops or anything like that.
But you will have to jump through hoops to get them the art in Switzerland.
Oh, absolutely. It is its own special journey for sure. And so what I love so much about launching a collection is that it is always like so anticipatory and you get so excited and so nervous. Every time I like sweat through my clothes, it's like bizarre. I just get all these butterflies. And then you get, and then you like, you just sit there and you just wait for like the pings on your phone, right? So it's like new invoice, new invoice, new invoice, new invoice. And so that's just like your artwork's like being bought like out of your hands and it's going to all the different parts of the world. And it's just like the coolest experience ever.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, we're going to link all the things. People can set their timers on Saturday and check it out. That'll be awesome.
Oh, I would love it.
Yay. Thank you for being on the podcast, Amy. We loved having you.
Thanks for having me. Y'all were so fun. Such a joy.
Oh, and you know what I've been wanting to say, Lauren? I think we should add this on the end. So this is totally a steal from the Car Mom and Liz St. John and their Carpool podcast.
We got to tell the people who's going to leave a review today.
Who should leave a review? Exactly.
And I keep meaning to say we need to read a review on the show too.
Oh yeah, we need to do that. We just need more reviews and ratings on the pod. So who should leave us a review today that's listening, Lauren? People who kiss their kids on the mouth? People who want to be artists? Where do we want to take this?
I think there's going to be more people who kiss their dogs on the lips or who allow their dogs to lick their lips. So if you are a family or dog kisser, you go leave your review for the podcast today. But don't come at me about my unpopular opinion. That's not part of your review. You're going to leave a 5-star review because you love the pod and you love listening to like what the blood boiler perhaps will be this week. So if that is you, you don't have to identify yourself, but we might know that it's you.
But
so go
Lauren
ahead
and I will
know,
and it'll make us tickled. And also, I think it's fine if you kiss your kids on the mouth too, because I do that. So if you want to leave a review because you're a kid mouth kisser, your kid.
Do it.
Let's clarify. Your
kid. You kid mouth kissers.
Wow. A lot of asterisks on this transcript. Yeah. So no one gets sued here. But yeah, go ahead and leave us a review. That'd be great.
Okay. Thanks for being here, Amy.
Thank y'all.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bestie Business Banter podcast.
If you like what you hear, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review.
If you have thoughts on the show or the segments you heard today, send us a DM over on the Momfluencer Instagram.
See you next time, Business Bestie.